Radio News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Just days before New Hampshire Republicans and Democrats choose their candidates for governor, voters got a last-minute chance this week to hear them describe and defend their positions with two televised primary debates. And even though in a primary there are fewer distinctions among candidates than in a general election, this year the contenders do stake out some significant differences from each other, even in the same party, on issues such as taxes, education, and gambling. Today in The Exchange, we take a last look at these gubernatorial candidates, all hoping to replace the man often called New Hampshire's most popular governor, John Lynch. Let's hear from you this hour with just 4 days before the primary. What do you still want to know about these candidates? What issues do you think should be front and center for the next governor? Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post your comments on our Facebook page. We have two guests for the hour. Joining us from Durham is Andy Smith, director at the UNH Survey Center and an associate professor of political science at UNH. And Andy, always good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Sure. Good morning.
Also with us, Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College, director of the Center for Civic Engagement there. And Wayne, thank you again for your time.
My pleasure, Laura. Thank you.
Well, and both of you, I'll start with you, Wayne. How do you see this race for governor overall, given that it's the first time in 8 years John Lynch isn't in it?
And that really is the remarkable context, is that we had a very solid, well-liked governor for so long who's decided to step away. And this race has been going on for a while. I mean, if you recall Ovid LaMontagne getting in, September ago, and he got in a big way with lots of endorsements and all of that. So we've seen this kind of play out over a significant amount of time. It's tightened up in some ways. Be very interested to hear Andy's thoughts on polling numbers, and I think particularly on the Democratic side, it's gotten very close. But we're seeing a lot of this playing out among voters in a time that's very political. We've got both presidential candidates coming to New Hampshire. There's so much excitement around the politics of this race, I think, come Tuesday it'll be a little bit of a letdown in some ways, but we'll be moving on to the general in an exciting way, I think.
Well, and Andy, give us your broad brush take on this gubernatorial race.
Well, I think the fascinating thing is how short of a campaign it is. Wayne mentioned that Ovid LaMontagne got in last fall, but for most voters, I think this is a one-week campaign for the primary. We had Labor Day last week, and now we're all of a sudden faced with making this choice, and I think a lot of people really don't really know the candidates very much at all. In the last poll that we did about the governor's race in the middle of August, the winner in all of the head-to-head matches was undecided, and that's largely because the candidates are still unknown. So it's going to be interesting. I think it's really going to be driven by turnout. State primaries are typically low turnout affairs dominated by activists, and I think that's going to be a key factor in determining who wins these races.
Well, and let's get into some of the issues and the candidates, and let's talk about the Republicans first, gentlemen, since they just had their debate last night. The two candidates on stage were Ovid LaMontagne and Kevin Smith. And although there are some policy differences between them, this debate was more about experience, leadership style. With LaMontagne considered the front runner in this race, Smith played a more aggressive role. He repeated several times LaMontagne's statement that he'd have a governing style much like the current corner office resident, John Lynch. Smith said he'd be nothing like Lynch, that he'd get out front on issues and take strong positions, even if they're unpopular.
But I'm not running for governor to be Mr. Congeniality. I'm running for governor to lead. And the reality is, if you look at Governor Lynch's record over the last 8 years, there's a lot of challenges that he hasn't tackled. Again, we have some of the highest health care costs in the entire country. We have the fifth highest business taxes in the entire country. We've lost more young people, 18 to 34-year-olds, than any other state in the country. And at the same time, our electric rates are through the roof as well. And I will lead on these issues. I will take a hands-on approach with the legislature as well and work with them to pass these initiatives.
Smith also repeatedly characterized his plans as bolder than LaMontagne's. While LaMontagne described himself as the more experienced and more realistic candidate, for example, he said Smith's promises to deliver deep budget cuts and dramatic changes in the tax code just weren't feasible right away.
My plan is comprehensive, and it's paid for with the PAYGO method, which is you find offsetting reductions in state budget. This is not going to be the end of it. If I'm allowed to serve the people of New Hampshire for another two or three terms, I would continue this trend. But to sit here today and promise the kind of cuts that we've heard is just not reasonable. It's not supportable. You have a two-year budget. That's what you've got to focus on, and that's what I'm focused on. And that's the using the real math, not the new math.
Again today in the exchange, it's a final primary primer. In just a couple days, New Hampshire Republicans and Democrats will choose their nominees for governor. We're talking about both campaigns, focusing on the Republicans first because they had their debate just last night. Join us with your questions and comments. What do you want to know about where these candidates stand? What will help you make your choice on Election Day, on Tuesday? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Wayne Lesperance, to you first, you know, beyond the individual policies, which we'll talk about in a minute, what's the big sort of personality difference between these two candidates? Because that's really been an issue in this race.
Well, I think you framed it exactly right. And I don't know that truly reflects their individual personalities, but the personas that we're seeing out on the campaign trail and in the debate last night, Ovid certainly wanted to portray himself as that steady, mature, you know, sort of thoughtful individual. And you saw Smith come through in a way, I think, that was, you know, more energetic in a way. You know, there's that youthful energy. And I think the strongest moment, in my view, last night was that clip exactly that you just played, where he said, look, I'm not interested in status quo. I'm not interested in how things have been. We're going to go after these very serious issues, and we're going to do it in a full-throated way. If that makes me unpopular, so be it. That really does contrast those two in terms of the style of the campaigns that they have brought forward, at least as far as I've seen.
And last night, Andy Smith, and throughout this race, really, we've heard Ovid LaMontagne make efforts to reach out to New Hampshire independents, maybe even to Democrats, whereas Kevin Smith has said, look, I'm not going to check my Republican identity at the door. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that points to where these two candidates think their major challenges facing them. For Kevin Smith, he needs to get past the primary. He's the underdog. He's the newcomer. He's certainly not as well known as Ovid LaMontagne. He doesn't have the experience that LaMontagne has had in elections before. Whether or not that's good or bad is a different issue. But he's just not as well known to the voters. So what he needs to do is really concentrate on those the Republican activists, the people that really want the red meat, the people that for whom John Lynch was not a popular governor. So he's going after his first hurdle, which is winning the primary. Ovid LaMontagne may, I think, be looking past the primary, and this may come back to bite him, but I think he's looking past the primary and looking towards the general election, where winning support from more independent voters, for whom John Lynch was quite popular, is really where he's trying to go. So I think what we've seen in the debates and what we've seen in the campaign so far reflects the familiarity of these candidates with their respective electorates.
And Andy, do you have any polling on this Republican gubernatorial primary?
Not on the primary itself. I have to say, as a pollster, it's a fool's errand to try to poll in primaries where turnout is so low.
Really?
Trying to determine who shows up in an election is by far the most important and the most difficult thing to do in any election. And when you have such low turnout, trying to assess who's going to show up is very, very difficult to do. And a difference of 5 percentage points in turnout can make a very big difference in a primary, because it means the difference from getting at your activist core to a more broad audience. And that kind of vote typically can be quite different. So it's George Gallup, even back in the 1940s and 1950s, said that only a fool would poll in primaries. And he was talking about presidential primaries back then, not state primaries.
You know, one more question on that, and then we should get into some of the issues where these gentlemen differ. Wayne, you mentioned the excitement this year. You know, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama have been in New Hampshire a lot. They're coming again. Do you think that sort of attention and excitement here in the Granite State over the national election may get more people out on September 11th for our state primary? Does it translate?
It's hard to say. Probably not in a big way, only because it's a primary day and those folks aren't on the ballot. So it's really hard to say. I think the level of activism and engagement is there. Interestingly, though, when you talk to and you see these folks out on the campaign trail, they're not talking a whole lot about the national race. They're talking a lot about what's going on in the legislature in Concord. You know, and I think for Democrats, you're much more likely to get a reaction when you talk about Speaker O'Brien. For Republicans, we talk about, you know, trying to continue the work that the Republican legislature has done. And again, Andy's right, trying to get those activists, those party members to get out to the polls. So I'm not sure the national ticket, although it does create more of a general atmosphere of excitement, is going to yield at the September 11th primary.
You know, it's interesting, too, picking up on what you said, Wayne. This is the first time in my memory that the legislature has been an issue in a governor's race. I don't think we've seen that, Andy, before, have we really?
Not in recent memory, certainly. The legislature in New Hampshire has typically been pretty moderate, modest. We saw some of the arguments about the legislature in the races in 2008 and 2010 on the Republican side. Certainly in 2008, that was something that was brought up against John Lynch, that we have to do something to stop the Democrats who now control the legislature, but not to the extent that it has. And I think that's one of the challenges that faces Democrats this year in general is to how to deal with the increased Republican motivation due to what I think is due to the economy. When the economy is bad, the president's party typically gets the blame from the top, from the president, all the way down. And what it means is that the supporters of that party, the Democrats, are less likely to turn out. So what Democrats have to do is really do something to make sure they can get Democrats charged up and ready to go at the polls. And I think that's one of the reasons that they're focusing on the legislature this time around, is they're trying to put a local face, Bill O'Brien in particular, on what they see as the national issues that they can hit Republicans with. Whether that'll work is going to be a challenge, but I think that's the strategy that they're trying to do, trying to take some of the things that will motivate Democrats nationally and in New Hampshire to get out to vote and put a local face on it.
Wayne, real quick, to you.
Yeah, I think Andy's exactly right. And I think the other wrinkle on this is that, at least on the Republican side for gubernatorial candidates, they haven't really emphasized the social conservative issues, right? So Speaker O'Brien becomes a convenient foil because there's red meat there to get progressives out. But Ovid and Kevin have both said, you know, those aren't priorities for us. We're focused on the economy. It's very smart on their part to do that.
And they said that again last night at the debate. And coming up, we'll talk a little bit more about the Republican gubernatorial primary, then switch gears, look at the Democrats. We'll take your calls, too, so stay with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. More of our primary primer on the exchange, and at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, it's the Friday News Roundup. The race to primary day changes minute by minute as the candidates jockey for position. You can keep in touch with it all wherever you go with NHPR's political blogging. Search for NHPR on Facebook and Twitter, or click on the Connect button at nhpr.org. New Hampshire weather today, partly sunny, chance of a passing thunderstorm. Highs today, 82 to 87 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Capital Center for the Arts, presenting Carolina Chocolate Drops in concert, provocative fiddle and banjo-based music, plus local fusion bluegrass band Rise, September 13th at 7:30, ccanh.com. And from Plymouth State University, offering selected bachelor's degrees online in business, communication and media studies, criminal justice, and nursing, plymouth.edu/online. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's a final update on the New Hampshire gubernatorial primary, which takes place on Tuesday, just a couple days away. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. What more do you want to know about these candidates running in the Republican and Democratic primaries for governor? What information might help you make up your mind on Tuesday? What issues do you think should be front and center for the Granite State's next governor? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And by the way, NHPR's state impact reporter Emily Corwin has broken down where all these primary candidates stand on many issues, from the budget to Northern Pass. This is called Primary Primer, and it's available on the Exchange page at nhpr.org and our Facebook page. So if you want more information, you can check that out. Right now, though, Andy Smith and Wayne L'Esperance, let's spend just a few more minutes on the Republicans and then turn to the Democrats, who took to to the stage on Wednesday night. We were talking earlier, Wayne, about how these Republican candidates have talked about the legislature, putting the social issues aside, really focusing on economic issues. It was interesting, too, to hear them talk about cuts they would not have made if they were in charge. Ovid LaMontagne said he thought the latest budget cut too deeply into payments to hospitals. Smith said the state needed more substance abuse treatment and more mental health services. So they're not going whole hog with what the legislature did, Wayne.
That's right. I mean, and that's a marked difference from Speaker O'Brien's agenda and the work that the legislature did in the last year or so. And you see, you know, in fact, Ovid coming forward and saying that he would restore cuts to state hospitals. So going actually in the opposite direction. But both are very much focused on, you know, a budget that helps to promote job growth and stimulates the economy. There's differences of degree over cutting business tax, for example, how far they would go there. But both agree that there should be cuts. So, you know, when we talk about budget issues, for the most part, they're not in step with the legislature, number one. And number two, while there is some difference, it really is just a matter of, a difference of degree between the two candidates.
There were also some differences, Andy Smith, on gambling. A pretty big difference there, although both candidates support an expansion of gambling options. And I think this is the first time I can remember in a long time, Andy, where all the primary candidates support, or all the major primary candidates support, expanded gambling.
Well, they're all supporting gambling because there are some financial issues or budgetary issues that the state is confronted with. Nobody wants to raise taxes, so they're looking for other sources of money, and gambling is a sin tax in a sense, in that somebody else is paying most of it. So it's attractive at times when you've got fiscal difficulties. So it's not too surprising. But it is interesting. The two candidates have different views. Kevin Smith seems to be taking a limited view, but something which leaves it up to kind of a market to determine where a gambling facility is placed, who's going to run it, et cetera, where Ovid LaMontagne has said that he's really said that have one at Rockingham Park and not make this open. And that's going to be, I think, his biggest challenge. Tough to say in the primary because there's not that much time left, but in a general election campaign, I think he runs into the problem that his law firm has represented Rockingham Park in a lot of these things, and he could be seen as doing some work for his employer by saying that he wants to have a facility at Rockingham Park. I think it's not so much the gambling issue there that's the issue as whether or not he's using his influence to try to steer significant state dollars to one of his clients.
A charge he is very much denied, we should say.
Absolutely.
Look, I'm right. Going to be governor, I won't be at the firm anymore, and so forth.
Absolutely, but it's the appearance is much more important than the reality.
Right, and they're still a former client, and that's how it'll be raised. It is a weakness, I think, in the overall argument for Ovid. If this is an issue that's important to a voter, why only at Rockingham? Certainly the folks at the track in Loudoun are talking about having something going on there. They would certainly want to play a role in this. There's a facility in Belmont, right? And so there are a lot of other folks who are very politically active in Concord who are going to be pressing for their interests as well. It'd be very interesting to see if Ovid sticks with the only Rockingham approach, or if he's willing to be open to other ideas.
Well, and two more questions on these Republicans, and then we should spend equal amount of time on the Democrats. And gentlemen, the death penalty also came up in last night's debate. And Andy, Ovid LaMontagne said he would not have signed the Kimberly Cates bill that added murder during a home invasion to the list of crimes eligible for the death penalty here in the Granite State. Kevin Smith said he would have signed it if governor. What did you make of that?
Well, Ovid LaMontagne has really been a pro-life candidate for years. He's been opposed to abortion on a pro-life issue as a pro-life platform. As a Catholic, I think this is where it comes from. And he's also been opposed to the death penalty as a Catholic as well. This is something that has separated, it's made it difficult for Catholic politicians who have been opposed to abortion, but for political reasons often, but for also for historical reasons, have been in favor of the death penalty. But Ovid's really keeping kind of a pure line on this, whereas Kevin Smith is taking, I think, a more traditional Republican line. The death penalty should be available, but it should be used rarely.
There's a third candidate in this race, gentlemen, Manchester activist Robert Tarr. Wayne, just who is he? And I'm wondering why he isn't getting as much attention as the other two in this race. He wasn't even invited to the TV debate last night.
Yeah, as you know, Laura, working on debates, there are rules that set aside for minimum, standards for participation. And frankly, Mr. Tarr has not, you know, sort of had any kind of a splash. I'm not sure if there's an organization there. I'm not sure in terms of how much, how actively he's campaigning. And I mean that genuinely. I'm not sure. I've just not seen very much at all. So I think for those reasons, it's tough to get to know the candidate. Obviously, a debate would have been great because he would have been able to talk about his issues. I do know that on the NHPR website, he is there, and there are, if folks want to learn more about him, they can go there. But at the end of the day, he's not polling, or he's not in the mindset really for most voters in this election, and so it's hard to make the case for inclusion.
Let me make one point on this because I think it's true for both Republicans and Democrats. What primaries are the opportunity for the party to choose the person who is acceptable to the broad range of the party. And one of the indicators of whether or not somebody is acceptable within the party is the kind of support they can get, both from getting endorsements from other elected officials and important people within the party, but also the money they are able to raise, because, frankly, money is an indication of support. Tarr and lesser-known candidates on the Democratic side both have not reached this or cleared that hurdle of being acceptable with a broad enough range of the people within the party to merit their inclusion in some of these debates. Just because you run for office doesn't mean that you've got enough support or potential support within your party to really be a candidate for your party.
Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join our conversation on the gubernatorial primary coming up on Tuesday. Close races on both sides, Republicans and Democrats, is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. As the primary approaches, is there something you still want to know about where these candidates stand? Also, what issues do you hope will be front and center for the next governor of New Hampshire? Give us a call, the exchange number 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, let's turn now to the Democrats. There were three on the stage on Wednesday night. Two former state senators, Maggie Hassan and Jackie Silley. Also, retired Air Force law enforcement officer and businessman Bill Kennedy of Danbury. Now, these candidates all have similar takes on many issues like Northern Pass and education. But the one subject where the differences are starkest is the so-called pledge against new broad-based income or sales taxes. First, here's Bill Kennedy, who says right up front he opposes the pledge and supports an income tax.
Our forefathers talked about fair, share. They talked about equitable rule. They talked about proportionate to income. At no time did they say that we had to use an antiquated pledge to drop all consideration of other revenue sources. So, once again, it's about being rational, about being reasonable, about being right.
For her part, Jackie Silley hasn't taken the pledge, but also hasn't endorsed any new tax, instead saying that she wants to hold a grown-up conversation about the matter. Silley said as governor, she'd look first at what the state needs to provide, from health care to education to infrastructure.
So once you establish those priorities and you determine whether they can be provided in the way that we already resource government with existing revenue streams, then you can also look at other options that may take the burden off from our property taxes as well as our business profits tax. I don't disagree with some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle that say that should come down, but you have to do that and maintain your priorities.
So that sounds like a we'll see.
I think that everything is on the table.
Silley's former colleague in the state Senate, Maggie Hassan, has taken the pledge and compared her firm stance to Silley's less clear position.
Look, I think voters need to know where candidates stand on issues that are really important to them. I have knocked on literally thousands of doors in five state Senate campaigns, talked with New Hampshire voters, grown-ups, about this issue, and they share my concern about the impact of a sales or income tax on our economy and our families. I oppose a sales or income tax, and I would veto one if it came to my desk. And I think it's very, very important that we be clear on this issue, just as we would be clear on many of the other issues that voters ask us about.
Again, those are the three Democrats running in the Democratic primary for New Hampshire governor. And we're taking your calls on this race and the race on the Republican side at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Andy Smith, to you first, I think. How big a deal is this tax issue for Democrats voting in the primary?
Oh, this is a tough one for Democrats because it really highlights fissures within the party. The party has had a pro-income tax wing going back for some decades. The fact that the tax pledge is there is a remnant from the debates in the 1960s and 70s over an income tax. And the Democrats have seen political success at the governor's level by pledging or by taking the pledge and saying that they won't go for an income tax or sales tax. Both Gene Shaheen and John Lynch were popular governors, I think, in large part because of that. But that doesn't mean that there is still not a significant part of the Democratic Party, particularly activists, who would love to see an income tax. They feel that the current property tax system is antiquated, as the clip mentioned. They are quite powerful. If you go back to 2000, the 2000 primary, Gene Shaheen was challenged by Mark Fernald, a state senator at that time, and Fernald ran on a pro-income tax platform. He got 38% of the vote against a sitting governor, a two-term popular sitting governor, in the Democratic primary in 2000. I think that shows that there is a fairly significant chunk of the Democratic activist group, electorate, that is in favor of an income tax, and I think that's why turnout is going to be such a huge factor in this race. If the activists who favor an income tax are the ones who get out and vote, this is something that I think could be could put Silly over the top.
Well, what do you think, Wayne? Do those activists, that 38% who voted for Mark Fernald 12 years ago, do those folks automatically go to Jackie Silly?
No, and here's why. The pledge in New Hampshire is sort of the third rail of politics, really. It's very interesting to see how progressives will say, you know, we really are for that, but we recognize, because we read newspapers too, that it becomes very hard in a general election to win when you are a pro-tax candidate. And so there's this bargain that happens at times for these folks that say, well, while I may be for it, I have to cast my vote for the person who's going to be more competitive in the general election. I think that calculation happens, and I think that's really what we're going to see on Tuesday. Are folks going to make that deal, or are they going to stick to their guns and say, no, I really want to support a candidate that's willing to put everything on the table, as Jackie Silly did. I think that's why she's accused of not being all that clear. But in fairness to her, I think she recognizes, you know, I'm not going to come out and say I'm for an income tax, but I am going to leave it on the table as an option, which will be read by others as being for an income tax.
I
think that's absolutely right. But I think this is a weakness that Democrats face across, both, regardless of whether it's Jackie Silly or Maggie Hassan, who wins the primary, because both of them have been on record in the past of supporting some form of an income tax, and that's going to mean that Republicans are going to beat them up with this issue, no matter which of these people wins, whether they say they've taken the pledge or not. This is, again, going back to the 2000 election with Gene Shaheen. Now, she had been opposed to a tax, but although she did not take the pledge in 2000, she kind of waffled a bit, and Republicans really beat her up over that, saying that she had a secret plan to raise taxes after she was elected in 2000, and the poll numbers for Gordon Humphrey, her challenger in the 2000 race, really went up after they started running ads saying that Shaheen was going to raise taxes.
That's what makes us so ingenious in a sense. And I'm not saying I like it or not, but the tax pledge is a yes or no question. The overall issue of taxes in New Hampshire, property taxes and everything else, all sources of revenue, is so much more complex than that, that if you try to have that quote-unquote grown-up conversation, you know, your opposition just puts you in the camp of either yes or no. So, you know, if folks feel like they're not paying enough in property taxes, if they feel like, gosh, you know, we could pay more there, then that's one point of view, I suppose. But what I think Jackie Silly is trying to say to her credit is that we need to have a more fundamental conversation about how we raise revenue in the state. And the problem with that is that requires a level of sophistication and complexity that is just thrown aside by this yes or no question on taxes.
You know, it's interesting. We talked with the Republicans how they said that they would have differed with the legislature on specific cuts here and there, but in general supported the work that the legislature, especially the House, has done. Boy, you didn't hear that, Andy, from these Democrats two nights ago. They called the legislature all sorts of names. What about the idea of these Democrats looking to the general election, as both you and Wayne said, over the Montaigne is looking towards the general election, trying to reach out to all sides?
Well, running against the legislature by the Democrats is not surprising, and it's also not surprising that Republicans, Smith and LaMontagne, have kind of backed away from that a little bit. The legislature, I think, has maybe overstepped the mandate that was given to them in 2010, which I think was largely due to Democrats staying home and Republicans coming out to vote, not that one side or the other won a political argument. So I think that they recognize that the current legislature is not going to be the legislature of 2000 that comes about after 2012. They want to distance themselves a little bit from it. But it's a tough challenge to base your campaign by running against Congress. Harry Truman was able to do this, I guess, in 1948. But it's a tough thing to do at a state level, because I think this race at the state level, despite how important the governor's race is, et cetera, is going to be dominated by what happens at the presidential level. So turnout at the presidential level, I think, is going to determine who is successful in November at the state level here.
There's another sort of unspoken issue in this Democratic race, and it's more between the two former state senators, Jackie Cilley and Maggie Hassan. And, Wayne, it's this. Jackie Cilley often makes reference to her hardscrabble roots, her upbringing, you know, very poor in Berlin, her dad being out of work, and kind of portrays Maggie Hassan as, well, wealthy and privileged and out of touch. Is that going to be an issue in this race?
It might be. I mean, one of the themes of the broader election, the federal election, is this issue of, you know, what Republicans describe as class warfare, right? The sort of out of touch elite. And so, the first two goals of any campaign are to define yourself and then define your opponent. And there's been a definite effort on the side of the silly folks to cast Maggie Hassan as somebody who's had some life of privilege, who doesn't pay property tax because of her husband's job at Phillips Exeter. And so, you know, to some, that's there. So to whether or not voters are responding to that, I don't know. I don't know for sure. But certainly they're continuing this conversation. So they must believe, the silly folks must believe there's something there.
Well, somebody said, you know, every politician in America wants you to think that they grew up in a log cabin and you know, that they built by hand.
That's right.
So our number for you to join our conversation with your questions or comments about this very important New Hampshire gubernatorial primary taking place on Tuesday is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send us a short email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And there is more information on our website, the exchange page at nhpr.org, and on our Facebook page. Our state impact reporter Emily Corwin has talked to all the candidates about where they stand on the issues, from the budget to Northern Pass, so you can check that out too. We'll start taking your calls and questions after a short break, so stay with us.
Sustaining memberships are powerful. Here's why. Your contribution is deducted each month from an account of your choice for as long as you want. It's convenient for you, and it creates a stable foundation of support for your public radio service. Being able to count on your support means NHPR can do a better job of serving you. Sustaining members, transforming the future of public radio.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from Cambridge Trust Company of New Hampshire, building lasting relationships and providing thoughtful, independent investment trust and wealth management services, cambridgetrust.com. And Goose Bay Lumber Company of Chichester, fine hardwoods, boat lumber, marine plywood, and West System for boats, canoes, kayaks, and wood surfboards, goosebaylumber.com. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's a New Hampshire gubernatorial primary primer. You can join our conversation with your questions or comments. What do you still want to know about these candidates 4 days from primary day? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post your comments on our Facebook page. And Wayne Lesper on Sandy Smith. Let's go now to our listeners. And Dee is calling from Suncook. Hi, Dee. Go ahead. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes. I want to know how in the world the Democratic candidates feel making these promises to voters as to what they want to get done if they should have the same legislative makeup they had last session. I mean, Governor Lynch wasn't able to get anything much at all done, and the president wasn't able to get much done because of Congress's mandates. So how can our local governor get anything done working with this legislator? How could they possibly do that, and what do they propose doing to do that?
Dee, it's a great question, and you know, it's come up in the presidential race too, Andy and Wayne. You know, there's Congress, which can stop the president's agenda, and she's absolutely right, Andy. The legislature can stop a governor's agenda. Go ahead, Andy, on that one, please.
Well, it sure can, but I think that the legislature in 2012 is going to be very, very different than the legislature in 2010. My sense is that we'll likely see a Republican majority in the legislature, but it will be more like 210, 220 Republicans in the House, and you know, 14 or 15 in the Senate. That's even factoring in some of the redistricting that's happened after this last election or in the last census. So I think that the legislature there is going to be something that is going to be much more easy to work with, regardless of whether the governor is a Republican or a Democrat. Historically, there's always been a fissure between the more conservative Republicans and the Main Street, more moderate Republicans. I think that's going to come back in 2012, and we'll see kind of a three-party legislature. Democrats, Main Street Republicans, and more conservative Republicans, but it'll be a much smaller one. Speaker O'Brien is going to have a difficult time, I think, keeping his own seat in Mount Vernon, which is had a by-election in last year and elected a Democrat from his district.
Dee, thanks for the call. It's a good question. Our number 1-800-892-6477. And up next is Martha in Hanover. Hi, Martha. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange.
Good morning. I'm very pleased to know that the Democrats have three excellent, well-qualified candidates, but it's very puzzling for a Democratic voter to choose among them because they sound like Tweedledum and Tweedledee. The issue for me is gambling. And I would like you to please define the words that are used, too, casino gambling, expanded gambling, gaming. And if you can, clarify for me the position of each of the Democratic candidates as to whether they would be supportive of that as a revenue source for the state or not.
And, Martha, it's a great question. But let me just ask you about your characterization of the Democrats as Tweedledum and Tweedledee. Maggie Hassan has taken the pledge against new income or sales taxes, broad-based, and Jackie Cilley hasn't. That seems to be a pretty big difference.
Yes, that is a difference, and it's a political difference, I think, as much as a policy difference.
Okay. Well, let's take her question about gambling. And Wayne, go ahead.
Sure. I think one of the remarkable things about the gambling issue is that, you know, whether it's Republican or Democrat, all are in favor in some form or other. Maggie Hassan, for example, has said yes, but only to a high-end, highly regulated casino, whatever that means. She's talked a little bit about that, but that certainly has a very specific description. Jackie Cilley has said, you know, maybe, assuming that there are proper controls and oversight. And she's also gone on to say that we should find a way to limit or eliminate, actually, gaming contributions. So again,
to lawmakers.
Yes. Yeah. So again, there is some difference between their position, but in terms of the broader issue of casinos, they're open to the idea, I think, is a fair way to put it.
And Republicans, as we said earlier, over the Montaigne says, if we're going to do it, let's do it at Rockingham. It's right on the border and so forth. Kevin Smith has said, let's have two contracts and put them out to bid in a more open process. So here's the question, I think, for you, Andy Smith, on gambling. And Martha, it's a great question. Thank you for calling in. It's the first time, I think, in recent memory where all the candidates are on board with some form of gambling. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to them, Andy, and I've talked to them, they don't seem worried about the expansion of gambling in Massachusetts because I have heard that those facilities would cannibalize some of the revenue that New Hampshire would get.
I think that's what there was a study that was done a couple of years ago. A special commission was put together by the governor that looked at the issue of gambling in the state, and that was the conclusion that they came, that the revenue sources the amount of revenue would depend on where it's located. The Massachusetts border would bring in the most revenue, and frankly, what we want to do is what we do always in New Hampshire, is get money from other people from outside of the state, and that putting it on the border in Massachusetts would certainly do that. And that's the thing that's been most attractive. But if Massachusetts is opening casinos, it's going to be a lot of that market's going to disappear. What they found across the country is that casinos typically don't, with the exception of maybe Las Vegas and to a lesser extent Atlantic City, Casinos really don't bring people from that far. It's more of a convenience factor. They see gambling rates go up within a 50-mile radius of the casino. So it's a convenience factor, and it's going to bring those people who may not have been in, going to casinos but may not have the revenue and income. This tends to be the people that go to casinos are not the high rollers that we see on television, but they're more blue-collar people who may not have the money to lose. It's going to result in fairly considerable social costs, and that is something that was also talked about in that governor's report, and that those things have to be factored in when you're looking at the revenues.
Well, Martha, thanks again for that call. And our number, 1-800-892-6477. Give us a call with your questions or comments about where these gubernatorial primary candidates stand on the issues that you think should be most important in this race for governor. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. Couple more issues that we really should get through, gentlemen, and one of them, all these candidates, Republican and Democrat, have been asked multiple times, Wayne, that's Northern Pass. This is the proposed hydroelectric proposal that would bring power from Canada down through New Hampshire onto the New England grid. Very controversial, especially in the North Country. But some business groups say, yes, we need it. Yes, we need more alternative energy. How have these candidates in general, all of them now, Wayne, talked about Northern Pass?
Well, once again, New Hampshire served as a model for bipartisanship and agreement, because every one of them, to a person, has said that they were against it for some different reasons. But at the end of the day, whether the proposal wasn't well developed or the issue's too complex for a yes or no, all of them in different ways have come out against Northern Pass in its current form. So I think that that reflects a couple of things. First, an emphasis on the sort of protecting the environment in the North Country. But beyond that, that there really isn't a very strong business voice or very strong utilities voice that has been able to bring pressure to these candidates and convince them to side with them.
What do you think, Andy? Northern Pass, that's a
Northern
boy.
Pass is a tough issue because
yeah.
The opponents of it, the people who are going to be impacted by it, are really, really against it. I mean, and I think this is an issue that has frankly unified the environmental left and kind of the blue collar hunters on the right in opposition.
And
the
property problem, rights too.
And the property rights people as well. The problem though is that the people who are going to be least impacted by it and potentially benefit from it down the road are people in the southern part of the state who kind of see this as, oh, that's a pretty interesting development. Maybe it'll lower my utilities rates down the road. And they're moderately for it. They're moderately in favor of it. But that means that the political question is, first off, where are you on principle, which it should be, but I think it comes down to the calculation of, is it worth alienating this small but very vocal and very organized group of people who are in opposition in order to please this group of people that really don't care that much about it one way or the other, but they're modestly in favor of it. It's a tough choice that these candidates are faced with this issue.
Laura, you made the point about property rights a second ago, and that really, I think, is key. And I think Jackie Shilley has done an interesting job at framing this and saying that, you know, what we're actually asking here is for government to use eminent domain for private consideration for a private company. And that resonates with voters. You can remember a few years ago the old Kelo case, Supreme Court decision, which allows for this sort of thing. And there was a visceral reaction nationally that said that just doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem fair. And many states enacted laws to prevent that from happening. So I think in this case, that sort of a framing on this issue plays well with voters, Republican and Democrat. And I think that's also part of why these folks are lining up the way they are.
Again, our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the social issues that have come up in this race. Andy Smith, last night in the Republican race over the Montaigne and Kevin Smith, were both asked point blank about some of these hot button issues, abortion, gay marriage and so forth. Right to work was also folded into that question. And I thought that was kind of unfortunate because they both just focused on right to work. The other things they said, nah, we're not interested in that. What did you make of that?
Well, I wouldn't say right to work. I wouldn't characterize that as the social issue so much, even though it is a very
divisive
issue.
But it was folded into the question, and they jumped on that.
Gave them a great out because it's certainly something that Republicans have generally been very supportive of right to work legislation. So it was essentially a lifeline for them with that question. But both of the Republican candidates, I think, have in their past been quite conservative. They're taking social conservative positions on social issues, but they're not talking about them in this election, which is smart politics because this is, frankly, an economic election, both at the national level and within the state. So their comments about not wanting to talk about it may seem disingenuous in a general election context where I think they'll come up, but I think in the primary, focusing on economic issues is the smart political thing to do.
What do you think of this, Wayne? Both Over the Montane and Kevin Smith have strong backgrounds, strongly supporting the conservative position on these social issues, gay marriage, abortion, and so forth.
Sure. Yeah, and when you pin them down, they'll tell you that, for example, on the issue of marriage equality, they would support repealing the law in New Hampshire, although both, I think, have said that they would grandfather in those who are already married. That's a stark contrast to both Jackie Sillian and Maggie Hassan, who both support marriage equality. You know, the abortion issue is also clear. Ovid LaMontagne, to a fault, you know, from birth to
natural death, as he says,
natural
pro-life.
Death, right? He is pro-life. And I think Kevin Smith is there as well. So, again, on these issues, they are social conservatives. But there's that sort of caveat for both of them that this isn't what we're focused on. And that's very smart because voters are very much focused on jobs and the economy. The one issue I mentioned to you in the break was the issue of medical marijuana, which I thought was fascinating. We haven't seen, at least I can't remember, when we've had all of the folks in one form or another supportive of medical marijuana, different types of regulation and who should regulate it, that sort of thing. But for the most part, they're there. They're not for decriminalization for recreation purposes, at least in the case of the Republicans. But this idea that that medical marijuana, if a doctor prescribes it, ought to be available to patients, they're lined up fairly closely on that.
Yeah, that's the first time that we have seen that.
And I don't remember if that's ever been the case before.
Governor Lynch opposed medical marijuana, was afraid it would get out of control.
Right. Andy, have you seen that before in New Hampshire?
No, I haven't really seen it. But one of the things we've seen with medical marijuana, like we've seen with a number of these social issues, is that as other states have passed these bills and the sky hasn't fallen, it becomes easier to make the case for it in subsequent states. So with gay marriage, you can remember when Vermont first enacted civil unions, it was a tremendous shock across the country, and people thought, oh my gosh, they're going to have gay marriages next down the road, and it was seen as a hugely important issue. But now it's gotten to the point where it's not that big of a deal in many, many states, and it's becoming less of an issue across the country according to public opinion polls. I think medical marijuana is a very similar thing, and it's also the coming of age of the baby boom generation who really inaugurated wide use of marijuana, that it's not seen as bad of a drug as other things, and the social pressure against use of marijuana isn't as strong among this generation. And I think it's likely that we will see in 5 to 5 years or so in New Hampshire that medical marijuana will be legal. I'd go far as to predict in another 20 years that the general use of marijuana will be controlled, similar to what we see with alcohol.
Gentlemen, I want to spend the last couple minutes that we have just looking ahead with you to the general election. And to you first, Andy, let's just say for now that on the Republican side, it's Over the Montane, and on the Democratic side, it's Jackie Sillian. What does that race look like?
Very interesting race. It's going to be a race between two people that have long New Hampshire roots I think is going to be fought over the tax issue, that Over the Montane will really hammer Sillian on the tax issue. And it's going to be kind of a traditional New Hampshire Republican race, maybe like an Arne Arneson race, or maybe like Mark Fernald against Craig Benson in 2002.
So what about, Andy, a LaMontagne versus Hassan race?
A little bit different. I think that it's the tax issue is still going to be central, but it's going to be harder for Republicans to make the case, even though that's what they'll do. Again, both of these races, I think, are going to be driven by what happens at the presidential level, what kind of turnout, what the parties can do to motivate their bases. If this is a Republican, a high Republican turnout race, which looks like it's heading towards looking at the motivation of voters, that's going to make it difficult for either of the Democrats. The other thing to put in, to throw in the mix is money. LaMontagne has raised a lot of money and hasn't spent it, whereas both of the Democratic candidates have raised money, but they've pretty much spent it all in the primary. So he's in a much better position to run in the general election just from the financial status.
Okay, and on the other side, Wayne, let's talk about Kevin Smith versus Maggie Hassan. What would that race look like?
Sure, and I think you see Kevin as the conservative, and will cast himself that way, And I think Maggie Hassan would also cast him that way as being closer to the legislature, again, using the legislature as a wedge in that election. Going the other way, I think Smith would, as Andy has pointed out, target Hassan as somebody who's a tax and spend Democrat, even though not nearly so much as, or at least openly as much as Jackie Sillie has said. Jackie Sillie is, if we go to the next race possible, Smith versus Sillie, is a full-throated progressive. And so if it was Smith versus Sillie, we'd really see even more very stark distinctions. Voters would have a very clear choice because they are so different in terms of their approach to the governorship.
Well, real interesting. Hard to believe, gentlemen, that the primary is just 4 days away. Andy Smith, I want to thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Andy Smith, director of the UNH Survey Center and associate professor of political science at UNH. Wayne, thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Wayne L'Esperance, professor of political science at New England College and director of the Center for Civic Engagement. And again, if you want to find out more about these primary candidates and where they stand on the issues, we have a primary primer on our website. You go to the exchange page at nhpr.org or to our Facebook page. This detailed primer was put together by NHPR State Impact reporter Emily Corwin. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Become a fan of our Facebook page. You can learn more about what we're planning, upcoming shows, and get extra links and material. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with a renewed debate over organic food after a recent study found it may have few health benefits. Then New Hampshire's recently approved voter ID law. We'll see how it might affect voters and election officials in the months ahead. And we check in with the No Child Left Behind law as big changes are afoot for this decade-old program. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, each morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show on the Friday News.